Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
Hi, my name is TJ Ryan. You're listening to Out There, and my guest is back again for part two of our interview. And her name is Anita, and she's from Escanaba. Thanks for coming back for part two.
Well, thank you for having me.
And, you know, I know you gave me some documentation, and I just don't know how far you want to go with it, but I'm guessing you probably want to go and tell as much as you can. This is something that Harold, you had made a promise to him. Now, in the last, if you didn't listen to the previous show, okay, here's a little surprise for you. Harold Olson is Charles Lindbergh Jr. Okay, if that's what the last show was about. And, you know, I'm sure there's been a lot of people throughout history that have said, I'm so-and-so, you know, because they wanted attention. But Harold wasn't like that. And we presented some documents and some facts in the last show, which maybe got you thinking that this is a possibility. But you made a promise to Harold that you would continue this, right?
That is correct. I did promise him before he died.
How old was Harold when he died?
He was 79 years old.
When did he pass away?
Approximately 6 years ago.
And he carried with him to his grave what he believed was an overwhelming truth. And just to recap what we talked about on the first show, is that as a young child, 20 months old, he was kidnapped from the Lindbergh household. And he was kidnapped because Dad had pissed off some of the gangsters. Now, Dad, Lindbergh, if you know anything about Charles Sr., I do recall hearing that he was against the Jews, as I recall, I believe, coming to this country.
That is correct.
He made statements against that. And then he had to go back and retract them after World War II. Or maybe he never did. I don't know if he ever did.
I'm not sure he did. I also know that he was favored the Nazis as well, too.
Right. And there were several people that were prominent over here that thought the Nazis were a pretty good thing. That doesn't really matter. What happened is that Harold, let's just put it this way, Charles Sr. was thought of as a hero, and he was just a human being, like any one of us. So this is not to slam him. We all have good things we've done, and we all have things that maybe we're not so proud of. Some of us maybe have done worse. Anyway, so Harold Olson, or Chuck Jr., if you want to call him that, is taken and kidnapped. And now, so it's possible to believe that Charles Lindbergh has had these dealings. Why not? You look at Hollywood stars, they run with all different types. Frank Sinatra comes to mind. So is it possible? Certainly. So if he upset some people and they took his son, then they're going to make it seem like the son's been found to cover their backside. And the father is not going to pursue it because he knows if he opens his mouth, he's got a can of worms. Didn't you also say something about the mother? They were going to have another child shortly after that?
Yes, they were expecting their second child.
The Lindberghs?
And it was a son. And she was having a hard pregnancy. And the stress of the kidnapping and also the stress of finding the body and the trial was really weighing on her. And he was afraid that she was going to lose that baby. Mm. And they didn't want to take a chance on losing another child.
So it's not like he didn't want to go after and find his son, but there was pressure coming from a lot of different angles. And, I mean, is that how you feel about it? Or you think they just kind of said, okay? Because later they helped him out, you believe.
Yes, I believe he was getting pressure from the governor of New Jersey, the prosecutor, the different politicians.
You know, if you ever, I'm sorry to interrupt you again, Anita. I just want to make a point. If you ever watch history programs or crime programs, watch how often prosecutors will go after somebody, and once they focus on somebody, that's it. And they really turn up the heat, and they want you, and they'll look at the truth and ignore it. They'll have evidence to prove somebody's innocent, and they will ignore it. And I've seen this time and again. I watch a lot of those crime shows with my wife. We watch a lot of those, and like true ones. And you just feel bad because, and I know it's the job of the prosecutor, but they will go after somebody regardless, even if the truth pops up that could prove this person innocent. So what you're saying to me rings very true, that they wanted a conviction because it makes them look good. They get reelected. Look what happened in North Carolina with
right.
those poor college students on that rugby team or whatever it was. It wasn't rugby, but the you know where they throw the thing?
I don't.
They throw it in the net. And what is that sport called? Anyway.
Cricket? No.
Yeah, I think it was the cricket team.
I think it is cricket.
Wasn't the cricket
Correct.
Team? They got, a bunch of them got in trouble because these women said they raped him. And then we find out the prosecutor is turning up the heat and he wants to get reelected. And anyway, the point is there corruption or will people lie a lot more than you think? I believe. Now, I'm not saying everybody does it. Anyway, I won't cut you off again for at least a minute here. So, Anita, please go ahead.
But there was a lot of different circumstances and that going on, a lot of pressure. And I believe, and also from reading the information that I have, too, that, they wanted a conviction. And since Charles Sr. stood up there and said, yes, definitely, that was my baby. And that was based on clothing that apparently was from the Charles Lindbergh Jr. Clothing that was tucked underneath the corpse.
Mm.
And even though it was proven that it was a female.
It was a female baby they found?
A female baby.
It was proven.
It was proven that. And they still didn't listen to that because Mr. Lindbergh said it. That was his son, and that's all it took.
How did they explain
for the
that?
Jury to convict him, and it was a rush, and it even had the limbs were sawed off to make it look like an animal had gotten to it. There was a hole in the inner ear that was used back then when they were doing embalming to hang the corpse.
Now, this is getting a little gross here, Anita, but
yes.
Now, just to clarify, because we talked about this before, you believe this was a cadaver. This wasn't somebody that they went and killed and stuck there to appear as the Lindbergh baby. This was a child that had previously died. So it's not quite as horrific as it sounds, right?
That is true.
But still,
it was a cadaver.
What's horrific about it is that Bruno Hauptmann is, if he's innocent, which I, after hearing all this, and I, you know, for some reason in my heart, I always felt there was a doubt there. And I really never really knew the story. But an innocent man lost his life.
Well, he was used as, I'll put the term patsy, from the mafia. Apparently, you know, they did find money, some of the ransom money, in his garage. And he told the people that, I believe it was a relative of his from Germany, gave him the money to, not to have, but to just have there to
store for him.
So also, you know, he was a carpenter as well, and they did find material from that ladder that matched also in his garage. But again, it wasn't him. It was whomever, you know, gave him the money and the relatives or whatever that took part. But he was somebody that didn't speak very good English. And it was someone that they could just frame very easily.
Mm.
So he was framed, basically. And so he was the patsy that took it.
Wouldn't be the first time, and I'm sure it's not the last time that's happened. So as we move along, Harold then goes up to where we're at. This show is out of Escanaba, Michigan. He lives with the Olsons. Eventually becomes an adult, goes off to Korea, as we talked about in the first episode. And just as he's ready to go off to the war, a couple of his, I guess they would have been Olsen relatives, even though they really weren't, but
right,
they wanted to let him know. Even his own family would not tell him. It was like cousins, right?
They were, they were cousins.
They wanted him to know that he could have been, he wasn't who he thought he was, even though he knew he was a foster child, or an adopted child, so he really didn't know who he was to begin with, right?
That is true.
And so they gave him a couple of different names, and one of them was that it could be Charles Lindbergh Jr., that he was Charles Lindbergh. And so that began his journey. And so now we're going to start moving along to where he starts digging up this evidence. And we had the birthmarks we talked about. What other things, too, come out? And you said there were several people that once they met him, there was a story about a nurse that knew the Lindbergh baby, the actual baby, before it was kidnapped, you're saying?
Well, the story goes is that Harold and his wife, Angie, were just recently married, and they were on their honeymoon in out in New York. And they had gone for a walk, and this lady, an elderly lady, came up to him. She had a younger child next to her, but came up to him and said, point blank, "Can I feel the dent on your head?" And yes, he had a dent on his head. And so she felt it. And she looked at him squarely in the eye and said, you are a baby that I took care of when you were very, very young. And you are Charles Lindbergh Jr.
Now, did she take care of him before he was kidnapped? Do you know?
No, I don't think so. I think it was after.
Because you said the baby was dropped.
It was dropped, and they did not expect the baby to live.
Now, who dropped him was the people that kidnapped him, right?
Yes, that is correct.
And they dropped, and that's where he had that mark on his head.
Yes.
And that's where this nurse took care of him.
Yes.
And obviously she knew the whole story, and that's when she came up to him and recognized him. You said there was quite a resemblance, and I look at the picture that you provided me. There is quite a resemblance between Harold and Charles Lindbergh Sr., isn't there?
As Harold got older, of course, he had extensive plastic surgery when he was younger. But as he had gotten older, and I also noticed it too, that the scars were becoming more noticeable. But if you look at Charles Sr. and Harold, and there are areas there that definitely you could see the resemblance. I had the opportunity to watch some earlier films, actually, of the trial itself, and saw the senior, how he sat in the chair, and then remembering and being with Harold, how he conducted himself, how he sat, how he walked, how he held his head. Very, very similar to the senior.
But do you think that's something that Harold could have studied to make himself come across? Let's just throw, for the sake of argument, that this was a big hoax by Harold. Do you think it's something he could have studied and learned how to do to get people to think that he was the Lindbergh baby?
I don't think so. Only to the fact that why would somebody who has, you know, who wants to make this as a hoax spend over $150,000 of his own money in 15 years?
That's a good point. That's a good point.
So I don't think, you know, what is it for him? You know, what would it be? And he clearly stated that he wasn't out for any money, fame, or fortune.
You saw his house. What did it look like?
Oh, his house in Connecticut was a very beautiful, modern, three-story home.
So that had to be a pretty expensive home.
I would think so, yes. They sat on, I think it was 2 acres of property, and he had built a pond back there. He also had a sailboat. He loved sailing pretty much every Christmas. His wife, Angie, and him would go to some exotic island.
You'd have to make a pretty good amount of money to be doing all that or inherit
yes,
that.
Correct.
And you said he didn't, the job he had really didn't make him that much money, did it?
Well, he was an executive. He was an IBM executive.
Oh, so he did
executive,
have some money.
So,
okay.
Yes. But as before, and he had also mentioned to me that, you know, the Lindberghs didn't necessarily provide him with the money. What they provided him were opportunities where he could be making the money.
Mm.
And doors just opened up for him. So he really, he always had money.
He did pretty well.
Yes, he did.
We're going to take a break. My friend, my guest, and my friend now, Anita, is here talking about Harold Olson and the Lindbergh baby story. And it's quite a surprising thing. And who would have thought that in Little Escanaba, in this area of the UP, because I've had some really strange things right in this immediate area. We've had people come in talking about them. And it makes me believe that it's like that everywhere. You know, I just talked to another woman who's going to be on as a guest. She was telling me, and we'll go to break in just a moment. She was telling me about, you know, we're going to have to take a break because I got to write it down because I got to remember exactly what the story is. But it's really fascinating, and it takes place in Lower Michigan. We'll be back in just a moment with Anita on Out There.
Out there, out there, out there, out
there. I just want to clarify something as far as what I stated in my last show. I stated that I believed Anita, and I believe what she's saying to be the truth as far as she knows it. And I believe Harold was a genuine person. As to whether or not I believe he was the Lindbergh baby, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm open to the idea that he could have been, just so you know. It's not like everybody comes on the show and, oh yeah, I believe that. No, I want you to know that I'm going to keep an open mind to all things. But right now, after hearing all this, I say it's certainly a good possibility. It certainly does raise some questions. And if you were here with me while I was doing the interview with Anita, you would see that she was very nervous and did not want to do this at first. And I think as we talked more and more and more, she trusted me and realized that, like all my guests hopefully do, I'm not doing this to create any kind of weird publicity. I'm not making money at it. I'm doing this because I enjoy doing it. So, you know, when people can trust you, they're going to open up more. And that's how I felt things went. Whether or not you believe it, that doesn't matter to me at all. I just like to put this stuff out there and let you choose. Next week, we got some really crazy stuff to talk about with Jen Couples, and we'll put that on. Plus, we have other shows coming up in the future, and we'll get to those as well. Got a couple more lined up. So there seem to be falling in place. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes I'm scrambling. But thanks for listening.
It's out there, out there, out there, out there.
All right, before we get back to our conversation with Anita, I just want to tell you a little bit about a friend of mine who lives in Lower Michigan named Jennifer Couples, and she sends me emails just about on a daily basis. I'll get two or three. All these different things that are going on, and some are events, some are strange things. She's witnessed many things herself. So she's always got something unique, I think. Pretty cool. And I'll look at it and go, maybe I'll talk to somebody on that. But there really was something neat that she told me the other day. She was telling me down in Lower Michigan, there's a place, and I don't know where it is, but there's a place where Al Capone's ghost is supposed to go because he ran liquor down there too, apparently, right?
Yes, he did.
So that confirms that. Well, there's also a place if you go there, I don't know if this is true, Bobby Kennedy's spirit and Marilyn Monroe's spirit can be heard talking from time to time. Now, according to urban legend in that area, Marilyn Monroe got knocked up by Bobby Kennedy and she went somewhere, and where'd she go where it would be kept quiet? In a very small populated area that was in northern Lower Michigan, and she had an abortion. Now, I don't know if any of that's true, but I just thought I'd pass that on. This is the kind, you know, it's just kind of neat. You hear, like I was saying earlier, you get stuff from all over. I find northern Lower Michigan and the UP. I have people up here talking about Sasquatches, UFOs, ghosts, you name it. Werewolves, all this stuff. And it's like, you don't have to travel far. And I just love all of it because it doesn't have to be about those kind of things. Anything unknown, natural medicine, to me that's unknown. So that's why we're talking about that's why we do these shows. But Anita is very serious about this. I mean, she's got a good sense of humor, but she's very serious about her pursuit of what she's been doing for all these years, piecing this together or looking at the information. Really, it was Harold who did all the work. He pieced it all together. And, you know, I guess I was going to ask you, is it possible now, could they go back and could they do DNA testing to find out if Harold, I'm sure his family would let it happen, but I'm guessing the Lindberghs probably wouldn't let it happen, would they?
No, definitely not. In fact, that was, I spoke to Harold's attorney about 3 weeks ago, asking if Harold might have left anything behind, a piece of hair, anything that maybe would have been given to his attorney. But again, no, there wasn't. But his attorney did tell me that, and there is a story to this, that he had approached Mrs. Lindberghe. This is after Charles Lindberghe had passed away, senior. So he had sent a letter to Mrs. Lindberghe, Anna, asking if there could be a blood sample. And of course, the letters came back unopened, and so there wasn't anything there. There wasn't any possibility at all. He was cremated. Harold, or the junior, was cremated, and there's a possibility yet, you know, that the ashes could be assumed. But whether or not the Lindberghs would even give up,
you know what you could do. You know what you could do, Anita. Any relative offspring is going to have similar DNA, right?
That is correct.
Like, you get a little kid, give him a sucker, and then take it away.
Right, so I need to go find one of the offsprings and give him a sucker.
Or just when they're done with it, like, give me that stick there. I'll take that.
Sure,
I'll take
exactly.
care of that. We don't want to pollute.
No.
Thank you. And then, boom, run it right to the DNA.
Right.
See that in the movies.
But that was an area that Harold was pursuing because that's what was needed. There also was a question of fingerprints. There were fingerprints left behind from the Lindberghe baby on toys and different things. And, of course, if, you know, they didn't have CIA or back then.
CSI?
Or CSI, excuse me,
yeah.
Back then. So the scene was, I'm sure, disrupted and they didn't gather it. But it was really interesting because I have a letter here dated 1986 where Harold was actually going out to California. There is a new way of, I guess, doing fingerprints or gathering fingerprints or some form or another. And the state of New Jersey got wind of this, and they presented him. And he had been asking for fingerprints, was told that there were fingerprints in New Jersey at the police department. And then when he did go there, of course, they didn't exist. But so they came up with this idea of we'll give you some fingerprints. Well, experts looked at it that Harold had hired and said that these weren't even children's fingerprints. They were adult, more or less, fingerprints. So, and then basically New Jersey said they could come back and say, well, the fingerprints didn't match, so you're not who you are. But they weren't the correct fingerprints.
Mm.
So these were two areas, the DNA and of course, fingerprints. And that was something that he was trying very hard to be able to get.
You know, this, you know, and this comes to me as a thought, and those that might be listening going, come on, there's no way this is true. Okay, you're entitled to your opinion. Think about those people that claim to be those black people, descendants of Thomas Jefferson. And that didn't come out till just recently, right? Last few years.
Right.
How many generations lived with that? And we know now, through DNA, that it's the truth, that he fathered more than one with one of his slaves. So history, or what we believe from our authorities, some of the time it's true. I'm not saying it's not true all the time. But I certainly know. Just look at what goes on, how often we've been lied to. Now, wasn't there a police officer also that came out and spoke up for Harold?
Yes, there was. He was a police officer on the New Jersey Police Department. And he actually met Charles Sr. And when he had the opportunity finally to meet Harold, he said, you are Charles Jr. He said, you've got the same type of walk, the same type of look, the way how you handle yourself. And he has always stated, of course he's dead now, but that he believed that Harold was Charles Lindbergh Jr.
Hmm.
And he had gotten a lot of flack also stating that from being on the correct.
For being part of that. It's just amazing how you think that. I've always heard people say you can't keep things covered up. And I believe we are living in a time when there's a lot of cover-ups.
You know, to give you an example a little bit how it convinced me, I had several years ago, I had to go out to Connecticut on a business trip. And opportunity was then that I would be able to stay with them that evening and finally get to spend some time with them, which I did do. And when I got into Westport, I had to rent a car. And, of course, my name, I'm sure, was someone that they could easily pick up, that it would be with the family. But I had to ask this person how to get to their to get to the address. So they told me, and then he said, "Well, who is it you want to see?" And at first I thought, "Well, it's none of your business." But you know, I told them, and the expression on that man's face was something I'll never forget. And so I went, and I spent the evening with them, and enjoyed my visit. And Harold gave me a lot of information. And of course, one of his comments was, while you're on the plane, don't look at this. You know, wait till you get home." So, which I did. I got home, and he also told me, he says, "Don't be surprised if someone's going to follow you or your phone gets tapped." And so I thought, oh boy. But when I did get home, I noticed out in the street that there was a car out there, and it had been out there for a while. And I noticed in the evening, as I was getting ready to go to bed, I looked out the window and they lit a cigarette. And I thought, wow, this is really strange. So I proceeded and I found, and I went out and checked it out with my car, and it was a government car. And then also my phone was tapped for at least a week. So,
when you say this is government, is this a state or?
U.S. government.
U.S.
Yes.
So it goes even beyond the state of New Jersey.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Is it possible that they don't, at this point, and I don't want to take away because you're going to add something else, but again, this question popped in my head. Is it possible this guy is a hero? He's considered the first man, you know, fly across, solo across the Atlantic. They don't want to ruin that in any way. So is that maybe why something bigger is involved, like the federal government?
Or definitely.
Or do you think it goes beyond that even?
No, I think it's definitely.
That has to do with
the spirit of St. Louis.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay, so you had this happen to you. What else were you going to say as well, Anita, if you can remember? Sorry, I cut you off.
No, that's okay. But that was my experience. And then I did realize that, you know, there are people out there, and they're checking everybody out. And
were you frightened when you saw that?
No, actually, it was kind of exciting.
Really?
You know,
you felt
I was
like
kept
a
thinking,
detective?
Oh yeah, definitely. It was kind of like, wow, you know, this has not happened to me before. And and even with his visit, the first time that that Harold and Angie came to my parents' home back in 68, along with closing the drapes and telling us this incredible story, he asked me if I could drive him and his wife to Green Bay because they felt people were following him. And I thought, yeah, you know, I can do that. This is exciting. So got my friend and we drove them to Green Bay and laughed along the way coming back and thinking, wow, what an incredible story, you know?
Wow, that is something. And even just to know somebody that is part of, something that was bigger, that whether or not he, you know, even just giving people the benefit of the doubt if you don't believe he's the real man, just to even think about that and be connected to that and look at everything that he dug up, all the years of evidence that he was able to uncover, as little as it is compared to today's evidence. You know, now it's so much easier with the DNA and everything that they can do. You know, we're so much more further advanced. Back then, if we had the type of CSI like we have now, I'm sure more than that would have been dug up. Paint chips and all this other stuff. So, you know, it's a tough thing. He lived in a time period when you could get away with covering things up like that. It'll be a little harder, but I think you could do it now as well. So is there anything that you want to, because we got about three more minutes to go, anything you want to add about Harold or any other road you want to go down? I mean, the type of individual he was, you know, he was a man that felt most of his life that he was somebody else. So you said that he was a good man.
He was. He was a very honest man. You know, he had a wonderful life. His wife, they, of course, were not blessed with children. He traveled. He did things that he wanted to do. Harold was the type of person that if he set his mind to something, he would do it, not just talk about it.
How did he treat other people? How did you see him treat other people?
With respect.
So
with
respect, he seemed like an individual that had a pretty good head on his shoulders, right?
Yes, correct. He was very intelligent, had a couple businesses of his own, and hard worker, very a type of person that you'd like to be a friend with, and he treated you at that as well, too.
Do you think, now this is kind of a stretch, but they just come to me. I don't know where they come from, but if he was here now, what do you think he would say? Because, I mean, you were one of the few people that were with him towards, you know, later part of his life. So
he probably would say, continue on, Anita. And even though he knows who he is, he knows.
Right.
I think there was maybe a little self-satisfaction of having the world or the people to know as well, too. But yet, in the same token, he lived his life the way he wanted to live. He met some interesting people along the way. And in part, he'd say he's happy now.
I would think so. And it, depending on what people believe, but I believe all spirits go on. I don't believe that there's a place you go where you can never get out of there. So even if you're lost for a while, you're going to find your way. And one of my shows, several of my shows allude to why I believe that way, because my own father, for example. But I'm just looking at it this way. If Harold really is who he says he is, and his dad is Charles Sr., they have a little meeting going on, I think, already.
I think so,
and
too. So,
and you know what? I've heard also, it's nothing but love when you get there. So I think Charles Sr., probably feels pretty bad for what happened, if that's true.
I think so. But yet, in some token, I think while Charles Jr. Or Harold was living, Charles Sr. Protected him.
Yes, he took
always
care
protected
of him.
Him.
Yes, so you can tell that there was love there. It just was a very difficult circumstance for everybody involved. I thank you very much, Anita. Is there, there's no book we can get on this, is there?
There have been a few books written. One of them was, and I'm not sure if you can get it on anywhere, but it's, I believe it's called the Charles, or the Charles Lindbergh story. There's another book. It's called The Airman and the Carpenter, and that's been out for quite a while. You can find that book pretty much in any bookstore.
Really?
It
was published quite a bit.
Yes, it was. You can probably find it in
the Airman and the Carpenter
library as well.
And
too.
That is the story about Harold, you're saying?
It's a story about Harold, but it's more about Mr. Hoffman. The connections there.
That would make sense, the carpenter. Okay, I was thinking, who's the carpenter? Okay.
Yeah, right. And then there's another one. It's the, I believe it's called the Lindbergh Baby. Now, that one, I'm not sure if it's out, because that was the one that Harold had worked with a journalist on and to write with him. And I know there were just a few copies that were out there.
Okay. Well, the airman and the carpenter, if people can find that one, then they can look for themselves a little bit. That's an independent, is that, or is Harold, did Harold have anything to do with that?
No, that's an independent one.
Okay.
Correct.
Good. And they point to Harold as being the son in that book?
No, not necessarily.
But they point that something was going on.
Something was going on, correct.
Interesting, interesting. Is there, there's nothing on the web at all, do you know of a website?
Not that I'm aware of, no. Okay. There isn't anything out there.
You know, if somebody has a question or a comment, or let's say you're listening to this and you go, I knew those people, and you want to get a hold of us, you can send something to my Dropbox, and we'll go from there. And I'll tell you how to email me, and then we can talk to Anita if you really have something that you want to add to this. Other than that, Anita, I think we're done. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Do you feel better?
Yes. You know, I do. I do feel better. I'm at peace, and I just want to fulfill my promise.
Well, you did. You did do that. And maybe, who knows, it'll make a lifetime. It'll be the lifetime movie. Or no, maybe it'll be picked up by somebody else, and this could be a national story. But who knows? The way things are covered up, maybe not. Anyway, we'll do everything we can to get the word out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Out there, created by Kevin MacLeod.